Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Dree.
Let's move over to another case that we continue to watch. Four families buried their children. Brian Koberger admitted that he did it. And somehow, nearly 4 years later, the questions are getting louder with some, not necessarily quieter, at least with one author. Christopher Whitcomb has a new book out. He's a retired FBI agent, and he claims he's pulling back the curtain on evidence that was never tested. Chain of custody problems that could have gutted the prosecution's case, and a university that allegedly watched a predator escalate and did nothing. These are the claims he's making. Koberger waived his right to an appeal. He gave no motive and he offered no explanation. And we both had a chance to get into the book over the weekend. I'm going to start there because there's questions about, there's a lot of questions about the book. Yeah, I just did a monologue about it that's going to be coming out later in the week that kind of goes through the whole damn book and debunks a lot of it, because there's a lot in this book that really needs debunking, and claims that are made in this book that have already been either litigated or can be so ridiculously easily explained away that it's not worthy of the breath in which it takes to even discuss them, because it's already been discussed and doesn't need to be reviewed 50 times over. Robin, what's been your thoughts on the book so far?
As Tony knows, this has been a long weekend of diving into this book. I'm sorry, Tony, I didn't mean to correct you, but he's not a retired FBI. He's former FBI.
FBI.
He quit after 15 years.
Okay, my bad.
So what I typically, I was actually analyzing how I analyze this weekend with this book. So I'll start there. And so when new information comes out that is contrary or something, I typically don't look at the information first. I look at who the information is coming from. And I do a deep dive on those people first. And so I did a deep dive on this author to gain an understanding of his context, his motivations, his intent of what he's trying to do before I look at what he actually did. So it's 15 years in a bureau, roughly, 4 years in a small office as an agent, as a street agent in a very small office. Very limited time as an investigator. From there, he moved on to the hostage rescue team, part of Ruby Ridge. And so he was kicking down doors, being very kinetic in his career.
Sure.
And not doing investigation. From there, he went to Quantico and taught new agents interviewing skills. And then because last year's after that, he did something else in management. So anyway, only 4 years on the street as an investigator, no legal background, no legal training, has done no commentary on true crime, never followed true crime, never followed this case, never commented on it. And so that's the background of him that I looked at. The challenge I had with this one was, what's the intent? And so his stated intent in the book is to shine light, and he felt he had a moral obligation because these facts weren't flushed out in court. They needed to be flushed out in court. He stated he believed Koberg was guilty. Okay. And he felt a moral obligation. But here is what I did the deep dive of understanding. Again, Bob Mata and our great Eric Richens would do a better job as well. And that is the fact that when you look at the intent of these things that need to be flushed out, it's an irrelevant point, and here's why. Ann Taylor, the lead defense attorney, that's her job. Her job, number one, her moral and ethical challenge that she is obligated to do, and this is across the board, is to save the life of her client who's under threat of death penalty. That's the number one thing her job is. And as she's going through her process, and we covered it on this show, and everyone did too, I was nervous many times. as we both were nervous because we thought he was guilty, even though innocent until proven guilty. But she was doing a really, really, really good job being one of only two attorneys in that state that are death penalty certified to stand on this case with, I think, 30 years as a prosecutor, as a defense attorney. I mean, she's got a lot of reps. And so she was doing everything she could to take all that evidence that he was given 59,000 documents by someone who broke the confidentiality agreement that he had signed with Ann Taylor's team. In other words, he broke a moral and ethical and legal. He's probably going to face some civil litigation that is being hinted by Ann Taylor's team for what he did to further the fact that they say these things weren't flushed out like they should have been in court, even though we think he was guilty. Mm-hmm. But here's the main problem with that argument is that it wasn't supposed to yet. As Ann Taylor is going through the evidence and seeing, again, it's her call and her team's call about whether to accept a guilty plea or not, or whether to plead guilty or not. And as the evidence is coming in, she's saying, my number one obligation is to save his life, and I don't think I can do it because of X, Y, and Z. So it never got its day in court. Why? Because she knew she wasn't going to win in court, so let's plead guilty. Mm-hmm. It's a moot point. And also, the other thing I looked at too, if his stated obligation was because he felt morally and ethically compelled that these things should be flushed out, he actually, if you look at the stats on this, he picked the most ineffective route you could possibly do it by publishing a book. Other ways he could have done it is that I pulled them all right up here. Escalate internally with defense team, pre-plea, you formal resignation, documented concerns, anonymized professional or peer-reviewed channels, policy or legislative advocacy, protected ethics and consultation and whistleblower route. And those would give him a much better route for actually challenging the fact that they weren't fleshed out in court, which there was no obligation to flesh them out in court because they pled before they had a chance to flesh them out in court. Anyway. Yeah. I'm no legal guy, but that's what I found out.
There's a lot. Yeah. It's one of those things where I said, I do the audiobook. I know you do the audiobook. And I looked at it from the beginning. It's like, oh, it's 12 hours. Time is one thing neither of us have a lot of. So we're trying to find ways of getting books in when we read them. And I think we got a few hours in and we're like,
we did.
Like, I can't waste more time on this.
I tried so hard.
I can't, because I don't have time to just hear somebody else go drone on and on about things that are easily disprovable. One of the big things in this book is the chain of custody with the knife sheath is making a mountain out of a molehill. And it's not even a molehill, because once you just look at the details, there's no molehill to be had. They digitally scan all of their items. So you want to talk about a detailed log of who has what? That's it. It's far more detailed than somebody with a pen and a piece of paper. But the big thing that's being argued in the book is, well, see, it was all written in pen. This looks like the same person on the same day on a sheet. Yeah, they're transcribing the digital log so you can physically see it. That's all that is. It's not supposed to, it's a supplement. It doesn't even need to be there technically. It just is. So
here's a problem with that too, Tony, is I doubt from his background, he's actually ever done a chain of custody himself.
Well, it takes 2 seconds to figure this out.
And he also never interviewed one person outside of the person that gave it to him, and one anonymized other FBI person. That's it. There's no consultation. There was no due diligence. There was no, he had no loving critic.
Here's another one that got me on the book. And then I'm going to go to some of the questions here. Oh, you're fine. And this is what told me a lot about it. Cause this wasn't like, this is a book that you're putting out, an audiobook that's being put out. You know, you polish that shit. You don't just like go with like your first take unless it's flawless. If you're putting out something for publishing, T's are crossed, I's are dotted. If you're missaying a word, you go say it right. Especially one of the victims' names.
Gonzalez.
And like, I get it. We fucked up the name 1,000 times on this show.
And I said every time I did too, because it's a hard one to pronounce.
And it was usually towards more the beginning of a case. Like when you're starting to learn people's names and you're reporting on it early on. Like that's when that sort of thing happens. So I get it. I get it when people do screw it up, and I think you can have grace there. But when you're publishing the book, when you're actually, this is the final, this is the refined piece that is not live, that's not just as you're getting the information and as you're learning it, the entire damn book, Gone Claves.
We couldn't
check the enunciation of the fucking victims' names.
Here's what really is stunning to me on that one. So I've written four books and I've been the narrator for each of the four. I have it, you know, when, and he's with a big publisher on this one. He's an imprint of Harper, I think.
Yeah.
And so what happens? So here's how the sausages make when you're doing your own audiobook and you're the narrator for
yeah.
it. You have a director. That director stops you every time you mispronounce a word. And if they don't know the spelling of the word if they don't know the pronunciation, what the director does is they look it up online and they listen to it online for the correct pronunciation. I can't tell you the number of times I had in Sizing People Up, I was saying trust but verify in Russian. That took me a lot of takes to get that run right sure. down. And so the director should have stopped them, said you're pronouncing that name wrong, if they had done due diligence even on that. But their lack of knowledge of this case,
and
anyone involved in it, and even the director that didn't correct them is like, hey, let's double check this pronunciation of that. I mean, I've been stopped so much when narrating my books to make sure I had the pronunciation right. Even when I said, no, I'm 100% sure, the director said, let me just double check it again. And they didn't do that. It's crazy.
I was shocked by it. I mean, yeah. I mean, I've narrated audiobooks of my own. I've done other
That's
people's.
Right, yeah.
And it's just, when we're, I do audio all day. It's not books. But like, if there's something, a word and it stands out to me, when I saw Gonzalez, I needed to look it up. I needed to go, because I didn't know how to say it correctly. And that's fine if you don't know. Look it up. And especially at this point in the damn game. We're 4 years into this case. You just look up the case. Steve's talked 1,000 times. You'll find it within 3 seconds if you choose to look. And if you're going to go publish a fucking book, learn how to say the victim's names, you fucking imbecile. That's my take on it.
Go to the sentencing. You can listen to the judge calling him by his name at the sentencing. You know, I mean,
it's insult. It just shows lack of concern or care for the material to which you're presenting. And if you can't present the name of the victims correctly, I'm supposed to take you seriously on chain of custody on something that is also easily disprovable. I just don't fucking buy. I don't know. Anyway.
And then it gets back to, so what do I think about the content? I don't care.
I don't care either.
Because it was like, all right, I won't even refute it. Because if it came from the 59,000 documents, all right, so okay. He says it is. So we have to take his word for it, because it wasn't ever peer-reviewed by anyone or loving critics, so I'll just assume it. But you know what? It doesn't even matter, because it's a moot point, because it wasn't supposed to go to trial. That's why the defense has you sign confidentiality agreements that you can't disclose. You can't do exactly what he did because of this reason. It's not supposed to yet. Now, if gone to a court, if it actually been on part of the case, then you can do this because, hey, we didn't cover this. It got the wrong expert, or it wasn't covered, and whatever. But it didn't reach that because they pled because they thought they're going to lose and he would have been executed.
Yeah.
So it doesn't even make it to that point yet. Like, so everything in the book is completely irrelevant to me. I don't care what's in the book.
There are a few interesting nuggets in the book that I'd like to do a piece on. We won't do it here today. Like, I found some of the letters, the very short letters. The whole reason I actually got the book is because I wanted the context of the letters, which are like literally like three lines. I thought maybe they were a bit deeper, but they're not. So if you're like, ooh, I'm going to read the in-depth letter from Brian Koberger to his dog, it's like a tweet.
Yeah, it's less than a tweet. You're right.
Yeah, I mean, I've done tweets much longer. I mean, and then the letters to his parents also incoherent and weird and like the size of a tweet. That's what I really wanted to dig into, because I thought, oh, this could be an interesting psychological angle of this. Maybe we'll do something on that. But they're telling in another way. And they speak to me of someone who is so deep into his bullshit that he's almost speaking a different language. I mean, we're getting into like utter delusional territory here. I mean, just quickly on that angle of it,
yeah.
what was your take on the weird, the letter to his dog, the letter to his parents? Like, he's psycho, like, he's talking about, and I don't have it in front of me, unfortunately, but it's like, he's talking telepathically to his dog in one of the letters.
Yeah.
I mean,
I got it right here. I can try to pull it up really
like,
quick.
Oh my God. That. Like, what is going on in this guy's mind? You know, he always thinks he's so too smart for the room, it seems, but this is like a new level of like, you're too smart for the room. And it's like he's fully embraced his bullshit almost. What was your thoughts?
The first thing about talking to the dog. So when it comes to people like this, some psychologists, it's a control issue because it's easier to control pets. And so you form an easier bond with pets because you can control them and they give you that unconditional validation.
Sure.
And so that's the emotional angle on that one, most likely. And that whole, you know, pack mentality buddy thing, his writing style and speaking style has always been the same because he's so devoid of real emotion and real connection. Remember, we saw this throughout the case, well, throughout the buildup and the leakage and everything. He doesn't know how to be a human. Mm-hmm. So he studies how to communicate and how to do things as a human, but he can't pull it off. So one of the greatest things we have as a human being is we pick up on things that make us feel creepy in other human beings. And the creepy comes, the emotion we have about creepy with someone is because there's an incongruence between words, actions, and deeds. There's an incongruence. And he is the epitome because he's trying to say the right words, but he's completely devoid of the emotion that backs him up because he's empty. It's not that he hates you. It's not that he feels disdain towards you. He feels nothing towards you. And he's trying to fake being a human by trying to pick the right words because he studied what he should say or not say. That's why he comes across as so formal. He doesn't know how to speak. He's an empty shell of a moron. The only way I'd believe in alien life on this planet is him. He's an alien. He's placed here in a shell and he's got someone inside working the switches, trying to get him to speak.
He's like a bad early version of ChatGPT.
Yes. Did you ever watch one of the funniest movies ever? I used to love was When Mars Attacks.
Yeah.
and then they got the robots in there controlling the humans.
Yeah.
That's him.
It's kind of like that. Like, maybe that's the answer to all of true crime. They're all aliens. They're all aliens.
Well, they're not human. They're inhuman. Remember, we use that term with the ones that do the horrendous things for children, soul rippers.
Soul rippers, yeah. You know, and I hesitate to like, because I feel like that makes it more difficult to try and get into the psychology of it is when we say they're not human, but I do it too all the time. But that's like, it seems to be the most accurate way of describing these ways of thinking because it's not human, but it is. I mean, for some it is, for some people it is. And I think maybe that is the roadblock that we have so much with people like this is because it is so feeling unhuman to us. But the reality is, and we have to accept this, is there's a good chunk of human beings that do not act remotely human.
They have the biology of a human, but they don't have the psychology of a human.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, there's a huge disconnect there. And if they could figure out what broke that, then we wouldn't have any more nutters like this.
We would solve the world's problems like that. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love for you to weigh in, especially if you bought the book or listened to it. I'm sorry. You're never going to get that $13
Actually,
back.
I tried returning it this morning.
You can do that on Audible, can't you? Like that.
I'm trying.
I always have so many damn credits on Audible.
I've never done that before on a book. I probably read about 60 books a year. I've never ever done that except this one. Is it? I even texted Tony. I said, you know, I'm going to go. He's like, I got to give up on this book. I said, I'm not going to give up. And this one, I tried.
All right. Well, if you're officially giving up, I'm officially giving up too.
We give each other permission.
Yeah. I'm good. Yeah, I'm good. Your thoughts on the comment section on Substack and YouTube.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe. Rechalk. Still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Drew McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the Claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.